Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 47 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Edward Lamb, and Sean Orford. Hello, Sean.
Hello, Edward. How are you?
I'm good. You all right?
I'm good. I'm very good.
Well, you've got a bit of colour in your cheeks.
That's because I've just been for a run. I've done my 12K, well, 11K if I'm honest.
You dropped it a bit, didn't you do 14 last week?
I did. I did 14 and then I did another 4 in the evening, or equivalent of.
Yeah. So all right, that's a little evening run.
Yeah, well, that was doing the Hour of Power.
Okay.
Yeah, and part of that is the equivalent of doing 4K runs. So.
Very good. So. We're going to have to figure out, well, when you stop doing this running, which, well, maybe never, but what are we going to talk about every week? We've been talking about this for about months.
I don't know. But I need to say at this point, make sure you go on to the Just Giving page and stick some dosh up there. I should be running, not this coming weekend, the weekend after.
May the 4th.
Yeah, may the 4th be with you.
Indeed. Star Wars Day.
Yeah.
It's been Easter, Sean. How was your little
It was good.
Little break?
It was good. Because I'm not on the chocolate, it was a bit limited. But I discovered this thing when I was in the health shop getting some bits called Buja Buja.
Buja Buja.
Buja Buja, which is a company that produces chocolatey kind of things that have no dairy in.
Okay.
So I got a little box of truffles at a ridiculous price. So whilst everyone was scoffing their eggs, I had a couple of truffles. Which
were they any good?
Yeah, brilliant. They were very good. Made with coconut milk. Pretty good.
I've been hearing about coconut oil as well. It's supposed to be really good for you.
Yeah.
You should cook with that instead of olive oil. Did I mention it the other week? I'm not sure.
Yeah. It's kind of thick when you put it in, and then it clarifies, isn't it, when you...
Yeah.
It comes clear. Yeah.
Beautiful. Good. Beautiful. I've had a good Easter too. Nice to unplug for a few days.
Yeah.
Actually, I had 5 days off. I worked a bit at the start, but... Three days pretty much where I didn't do any emailing and what have you.
Yeah, no, I've had time out too. I'm only kind of just getting back into it today.
Yeah.
And I've got a fairly easy day today.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the week will be a nice week. And Ray and I, it's got a lot of time together this week, so that's good.
And the weather's gone good, eh? We're coming pretty good.
Well, when I was running this morning, the sun was shining in my eyes. I should have had my sunglasses on.
Mm.
It was quite...
Some wraparounds.
Glare, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd look cool with my sunglasses on and my headband.
I don't know.
Have I told you about my headband?
No.
When I stopped wearing a hat when it was cold, because the hat kept the headphones in my ears, and then with the hat off, the headphones kept popping out. So I went online and I found this headband that makes me look like a right tart. But it's got headphones in the headband. So I put it on, I look like a ninja, you know, and plug it in the back. And it's really good.
We need to get a photo of this. Take a selfie next time.
Stick it out. Yeah. Is that with the red face?
Yeah. Excellent. Just before we get started on this week's topic, I want to just say thank you to Carly, who has emailed in. Carly actually reviewed our show on iTunes a while back. Didn't realise it was her. But Carly does some good work for World Talking News paper. Not World Talking News. And also Free Cakes for Kids. the World chapter.
Brilliant.
Cool little charity. I'll put some links up in the show notes.
Brilliant.
To check them out. But I want to say thanks to Carly, because she's going to help us promote via her own network our sponsored Day of Silence, which we need to get organised, actually.
Yes, yeah, it's good.
So we'll get a date in the diary for that soon. But hello, Carly, and thank you very much. I think we should go dive into our weekly topic, Sean.
Yeah.
Initially, we were going to talk about what it's going to be titled, The Pressures of Child Rearing. It's a little bit negative, so we're going to call it The Challenge of Child Rearing.
Because here we don't have problems, we just have challenges.
Yes.
That's the thing.
Yeah. And on that top 5 list of life-changing things...
It's right up there.
It's up there, isn't it, having kids.
Yeah.
And as wonderful as it is, and I can testify to that because I bash on about it most weeks at some point, it brings a set of challenges, doesn't it, which can massively destabilise people and affect your life in all kind of ways.
I think that comes back to family structure. We were talking about initially you had extended families, so they're either living in the same house or very close community. There would be parents, grandparents, aunties, uncles, cousins, all kinds of people living close together and supporting each other.
Yeah.
So that when you have that big unit, which may be 50 people, something like that, and you take on one more person as a child, then the stress management function of the extended family is huge. Yep. So the impact of the child is quite diminished. Yeah. If you're a nuclear family and there's only two of you, and you take on a new person, a child, so you've just increased your population by 50%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then the effect of that is huge on you two people because there isn't the support of the network around you. And that's dramatic. But if you go below that, say you're a single parent and you're having a child and all you've got for support is yourself and there isn't anybody else, then it starts to become quite critical.
Yeah.
So the impact's going to be greater the smaller the family group that you belong to.
Okay, that's an interesting point to start off with. I mean, I've written down a list of the ways that Will's arrival has smashed my life to pieces in a good way. I'm fortunate, I guess, in that we've got grandparents on hand.
Yeah.
Within a couple of miles, and he's grandchild number one for both sets of parents. To Beth and I. So, like, he's, you know, any chance they can get with Will, they're all over it, you know, and we rely on that quite a lot. At first, I was kind of thinking, well, maybe we rely on it too much, and there's a bit of guilt, like, oh, are we taking this for granted a bit, because we childcare, Will's with my mother-in-law 2 days a week. But then thinking about it, as time's gone by hundreds of years ago, grandparents will always be getting involved, helping out, right? And,
There's a big issue in evolutionary psychology about what's menopause about. Why would women get to a point when they cease to be fertile and the males carry on being fertile? Mm-hmm. And the assumptions when you look at the work people have done around it is that the postmenopausal woman has a huge role to play in extended society in terms of a knowledge giver. So the older women in certainly rural communities were seen as like the wise old woman. Uh-huh. They would also usually be the midwives, but they would also be there helping to raise the children.
Yeah.
And one of the assumptions is that the reason that human beings have been so successful is because of menopausal women. Mm. They're supporting in ways, they support the fertile women. Yeah, if the man's out doing the work, we assume, and the woman's raising the kids, and maybe there's lots of kids, because I guess a woman in a normal situation, whatever that is, would probably have about 17 children. So you need the menopausal women to help.
Blimey.
And that's why human beings have been so successful on the planet.
We've done all right, haven't we?
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah.
Yeah, so for me, it's brought our extended, I've always been close to my family, but it's brought us closer together, I think, because we see more of my parents now, and the grandparents get mugged in and all
that. But the benefits for Will. I mean, Will has this extended family, and each of those relationships for him are different.
Uh-huh.
So his socialisation skills are developing all the time, because he will respond differently with different people, have different kinds of relationships, so he's expanding as a person. Whereas if someone is stuck with one person all the time, which would be the single parent option.
Uh-huh.
You know, that they have no variation, no skill learning with other people.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a pretty chatty little fellow, Will. Yeah. He likes hanging.
He's very well socialised.
Yeah, I mean, he has 2 days in nursery as well.
Yeah.
Which I think can be an issue in terms of kind of, for certain parents and mums, it can be kind of, feel a bit guilty about doing that. But we've both seen, Bethan and I, that Will's benefited a lot from that time in nursery. Because he'll just muck in and with all sorts of people and just chat to all sorts, which is good.
Yeah, and that's the important bit about developing him as a person.
Well, I mean, I've talked about how it's brought us closer together as an extended family, which is brilliant. But in certain ways as well, it's kind of weakened certain links with other groups of people that we used to hanging out with in our late 20s and all that, and going out and having fun. There's groups of friends now that I don't really see as much anymore.
Yep.
Which I kind of miss that, I guess, but there's only so much time in a day, isn't there?
Yeah, it changes. The demands are different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure there are lots of women listening to this that may be in a position where either them directly or watching their own parents, where they had like an absent father. You know, maybe he was down the pub or he was working or doing whatever he was doing. So the woman was doing it all and the man was only kind of coming and going. The idea of a new man who is there being an equal support with the woman is fairly new, isn't it? So from that point of view, you must be a new man.
I guess I am, yeah. I look at I mean, my dad's a legend. When I was very young, he had a pretty full-on job.
Yeah.
Beyond 9 to 5, he was in retail and he was a shop manager.
Yeah.
So he was basically out first thing, back late at night, you know, well, not that late, but quite often, you know, he probably wouldn't even see us some days.
Yeah.
Maybe. And he'd even work the odd weekend as well here and there. Retail being open all hours, what have you.
Yeah.
But that's in reflection to me now. I might even see William more than Bethan does, my wife. I'm kind of at home, working from home most of the time, so I'm the first, last person he sees in the morning and the first one he gets back from nursery or whatever.
True.
So,
but that whole idea that for some people, that the father's going to go out before the kids get up and maybe will come back after the kids have gone to bed.
Yeah.
Just in doing his work, you know. That doesn't take into account the fact that we have women working as well. I mean, you Bethan goes out to work as a teacher.
She does.
So that there can be situations for some kids where maybe they're parked at a preschool club for breakfast and they're at an after-school club for their tea,
yep. You know,
and they have their lunch at school. And the parents literally are only just picking them up from bed and dropping them somewhere, then picking them up and then taking them to bed, really.
Yeah.
So that can be quite tough.
Yeah? It can, yeah. Well, the financial pressures that can be placed on families are pretty rough. And you've got some stats, haven't you, Sean?
Yeah, it's quite amazing. I'll put the link up for it. But it's estimated there was a survey done with the Telegraph newspaper January this year. But reckons that the cost of raising a child to the age of 18 is £227,000.
Blimey.
Yeah, and you can burn a good 100,000 of that by the time they're 10, 11. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that is going to be in the nursery childcare costs, which are huge.
Yeah, I know a little bit about that. It's crazy. But
when you start adding, you know, you have, you know, more than one child, so now you've got two. That means that you're talking about it's going to be £500,000 to raise these two kids, increasing all the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you're looking at those kinds of figures
mm-hmm.
over time, which is a huge amount of money. And if the majority of it is going on childcare costs, and you think about what cost the breakdown of the extended family to nuclear family has for society, not just financially, but socially and emotionally too.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of stuff in there for us to consider, really.
In the couples work that you do, how often is it a case where you can kind of work back through the problem and find that having a child has been an issue or the start of an issue for a couple?
Certainly true that the majority of men that have affairs in the work I do have the affair when the woman's pregnant the first time.
Okay.
Yeah, the woman becomes inaccessible to the man in some way.
Mm.
And then there are a lot. There are a good percentage of men who have problems after birth because the child is monopolising the mother, especially with things like breastfeeding. That can be, for some guys, a big issue.
Right, okay.
You know, someone else is on my breasts kind of feeling, you know, which can be a big deal. Yeah, but one of the things that we're looking at here is that the challenge, we start off with the word problem and change it to challenge, of having children is the effect that it has on you as a couple.
Yep.
And that can be enormous, can be huge,
mm-hmm.
And does lead to people splitting up. And we have, it's come back down, we were up to 50% divorce rate, which has come back down, which leads us to the second issue of children, which is about stepchildren.
Yep.
So that there's one whole ball game when you're raising your own kids. When you start raising other people's kids, then it starts to become even bigger an issue, and people don't realise it. I mean, I'm sure that as a society we will change and develop to take account of the amount of stepchildren around.
Yeah.
But it is a big issue, and I deal with so many couples who are having problems with the stepchildren.
Mm, okay, well, the church that I attend... fairly frequently, Gunther's my father-in-law. There's a few couples there that have fostered kids as well. They're doing amazing work. Like, to be fair, that must put a huge strain on them.
Yeah. There are some families, I've worked with families who are foster families, who just love looking after kids. Mm. And they will have a child, maybe a few, you know, three, four, and they may have them for a period of time, and then they settle them with adopted parents, and off they go, and then they get the next lot in.
Yeah.
And I know one woman who looks after newborn babies and through to adoption, which might be at 6 months or whatever. So she always has a new baby, and she just loves new babies. So she's in heaven.
Wow.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Kudos to those people that do that work.
Yeah, yeah, amazing.
It's important, isn't it?
Amazing. Yeah.
About postnatal depression, you've got written down
here. Well, postnatal depression is something that affects most women in some way, but it's not necessarily noticeable. But what it usually means is that because of the huge hormonal changes that are going on, that there's going to be a disturbance with the hormones, therefore a disturbance with the emotions. And yeah. Some of those emotions may be dark at some point.
Yeah.
Again, working with women who get anxiety after birth, especially if the woman's in a situation where she is on her own, and maybe she's on her own because her husband's gone back to work, so now she's on her own, she's got to come to terms with being, you know, first child on her own, and that can be scary for lots of women. They don't know what to do, you know, child cries, they don't know how to get it to stop, they don't know what's wrong with it. And gradually you learn with a child that different kinds of crying means different things, don't you? Like,
yeah.
this is I hurt, and this noise means I want food, and this noise means pick me up and walk around with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we start to get into that language issue before we get to words.
Yeah, well, I was chatting with my folks in Bethlehem the other night, because we've got number two on the way, so we're kind of trying to relive what it was like when Will first landed. And that crazy first, like, 24, 48 hours. And there was a bit apart where Bethan was in this maternity ward in Arrow Park up the road at our local hospital. And I'd dashed off home, but I was basically booted out, but I needed to go home to get some sleep anyway because I hadn't slept for a day and a half or something ridiculous. And Bethan was alone in this ward. They have single rooms now,
yeah,
like little hotel rooms.
Yeah.
She was in this room on her own with Will, not really knowing what to do.
Mm.
And I think it was pretty freaky for her, actually.
Because,
Well, you have this list of things you're supposed to do, and she was told that a baby should have his first either feed after every 4 hours. So Will was lying there asleep. Bethan got to like 4 hours, and she's like, well, do I wake him up? And basically she was advised to. I want to talk more about the advice that you're given.
Yeah.
In inverted commas. So she woke him up and he just obviously went a bit nuts, like, as you would if someone woke you up. And he didn't want any milk, he just wanted to sleep for that time. And I do remember that about the early stages of, you know, obviously not in hospital that long now, they try and kick you out as soon as they can. But you're given a lot of advice, and there's tick boxes of sheets and sheets of things to do, and that the midwives obviously have their quota to fill and things to do, and you're given so much advice, and so much pressure's put on mums and dads in that initial stage, and I can see why that would lead to a lot of anxiety.
Yeah.
Because it did for us.
But again, you see, in an extended family where you've got mothers, grandmothers, you know, sisters, cousins, all that kind of stuff, that have all had children, mm-hmm. there's a collective knowledge in the family, which when you're on your own as a couple isn't there.
Yeah.
And so that you are on your own, literally. So that experience of Bethan being in the room and not knowing what to do is something that must be replicated across the Western world hugely.
I'll bet.
Enormously.
Number two, I know now, will be more confident, obviously, and we'll know which advice to ignore and just say, yeah, right, whatever, you know, do one to the midwives.
Yeah. I mean, after the last war, I think it was in the 50s, might have been a little bit later, there was a guy called Dr. Spock, not to be confused with Mr. Spock from Star Trek.
Yeah.
But Dr. Spock was the authority on child rearing.
Dr. Spock.
Yeah, the original Dr. Spock. He was an American paediatrician. And I'll put a link up for him on this. But he he wrote a book which became the seminal work. It was How to Raise Children. So, and from him, there came all kinds of issues where people argued with what he said, and he was the expert. And later on, it turned out that many of the things that he said, even he retracted as not being good things. But the issue of, should you leave a child in a bedroom to cry itself to sleep?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one. As opposed to the sort of continuum concept where the child is strapped to you and sleeps with you and is with you all the time.
Yeah.
And there's whole kind of variations between those two points of view that in different families and different societies and cultures work or don't work.
Yeah. Well, I've got advice written down here, and there's so much advice given now, and there's so many different places you can get it, obviously online, and the advice you get when you first have a kid, and the midwives come out and see you every... whatever it is, I think every month, early stages after he's been born. But there's so much advice that contradicts itself now. And even, you know, in the 30-year gap between Will landing and me landing for my mum, the advice has changed so much.
Yeah, yeah.
In terms of, like, things, little things like which side a baby should sleep on. I think when I was born, it was on the front, but then the whole cop death thing kicked off, and now it's got to be on the back. I think it's on the back. I might have got it the wrong way around.
But always there'll be a changing fashion. I mean, at one point, one of the beliefs was that people were using foam mattresses and the foam was giving off chemical substances that were creating cot death. There were all kinds of things at different times that people are worried and concerned about. All these fashions in different things. I mean, sadly, babies die. And one of the things... And certainly my own direct experience of having had a child die is that we talk about a child being born into a family that can have a huge effect on a relationship or on the family as a whole. But a child dying can have equally as much or more devastating effect, dramatic.
Yep.
And that idea isn't just a baby coming, but a baby going, even to the point where when babies leave home. You know, when they grow up and they leave home, for the mother, that can be a very, very difficult time, sometimes for the father too.
Yeah.
But I work with loads of mums who are going through that rite of passage where the last child goes to primary school. You know, last child goes to secondary school, last child leaves school, last child leaves home. Mm-hmm. And each time the woman's experience of herself changes, so that the answer to the question, who am I, is different. Whereas for the man, it's usually fairly constant. Unless you are a house husband or you have a lot of contact with the children. For lots of regular guys, life is fairly flat and static, but the woman is changing all the time.
Yeah.
So therefore, because she changes and the way that she sees herself and her role changes, therefore her experience in her relationship changes, therefore it affects the whole dynamic. So the children are feeding right the way through.
Yeah.
Into everything that we do.
I should have got my parents on to as guest interviews because they're in a big old house by themselves now. I think my sister moved out probably, I don't know, a year ago, something like that. So she was the last to fly the nest. So I should see how my mum's coping with my dad and vice versa.
It's a big issue, though, isn't it? If you've got an enormous house, it's been a family house. And it's been full of kids and noise and stuff, and then gradually they all go.
Yeah.
Do you keep that house as it is so that those children and the grandchildren can come back and stay and you can recreate that? Or do you do the downsizing thing, where you downsize to a much smaller place that doesn't fit all these people in, which is okay, except for when there's no one there, you're rattling around like peas in a tin because there's no one in the house. Yeah.
Yeah. What would you do?
I'm okay staying with the house the size that it is.
Yeah.
And because our house is a focal point. So at Easter, I mean, on Easter, there were just loads of people there eating and kind of partying all through, you know, and that's good.
Yeah,
that's
good. I mean, I remember growing up, my gran in Newcastle, who she moved on from this world quite a number of years ago, but every summer we'd go up there and she continued to live in the family home there, which is a huge, big 5-bedroom. I mean, Lord knows what they paid for it then. It's probably worth millions now. Like, nothing. It's probably worth pennies, you know, 80 years ago, whatever.
Yeah.
Amazing place, though. The house would fill up in the summer when kind of family kind of got back together in Newcastle. And
yeah.
Basically, she's living alone in it for
Yeah.
Most of the year, really. But, man, we loved it, you know, valued it so much, that place.
Yeah. But in the older system, as it were, we're more mobile now, but in a system where the blacksmith's son becomes the blacksmith and the community is that kind of constant, that house would have been full all the time of people.
Yeah.
Yeah, people may have been coming and going, but it would have been much fuller. Whereas now our families explode. They go all over the place. We have people, you know, relatives living in Australia, New Zealand and Canada and all around the place. And we've, in many ways, we've lost that extended community. Mm. And people try to recreate it. I'm always fascinated by the retirement situation, where more and more in Britain we're seeing these complexes where you have a flat which you live in, maybe as a couple or as a single person, within this complex, which is a social community of its own. It has social things going on in social areas. Maybe there's a swimming pool and a gym and the equivalent of a restaurant, that kind of stuff, although you can cook in your own place if you want. But that idea that people are trying to recreate what is effectively an extended family.
Yeah.
And that natural human drive to come together is really, really important for us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that children need too, and they get deprived of it in single parent and nuclear families that aren't connected to a bigger group. And then we worry about society and socialisation and people's social behaviours. But if people aren't being socialised, I mean, Will's in an amazing position. He's got his grandparents both sides. He's going to nursery. So his experience of people every week, he has this great variation of people that he has to, and it's a good has to, interact with. He has to learn to be different. And we know all about learning and brain development.
Mm.
Yeah, it's all there.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Well, one of the things that worries me about the very nuclear situations or the single parent situations is the amount of times I've done home visits and there's a child who maybe is in a high chair, who's given his food and then is turned towards the television. Mm-hmm. And the child may be feeding themselves. The mother may be doing some feeding as well. But maybe there's other kids to deal with. So what's happening is the kids are being sorted out with food and they're being pointed towards the screen, because the screen becomes this kind of childcare facility.
Sure.
Yeah.
Distraction. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're a mum and you're up to your eyeballs and you can't get everything done, it's a lifesaver, I guess. You know.
Oh, man.
Lots
well,
of
now
times.
Will's working on his TV stare. He's getting it down quite nicely at the moment. I'll stare at him while he's staring at TV and you can pass your hand in front of his eyes.
It's gone, yeah. Nothing. Well, there's a thing where if you watch it, the jaw goes slack. And when the jaw goes slack, the child's actually in a trance state watching the television. And it is a case like, your tea's ready. Your tea's ready. Your tea's ready. And then you wave your hand and they go, what?
Yeah.
Because they've actually been in a trance watching the TV, which is what the advertisers want, isn't it?
Yeah. I've seen your lad Josh on his iPad as well, man.
He
plugs in.
Yeah.
Walking around
the house. He's locked in. Yeah. Yeah.
Not that I'm not guilty of that as well, but I've watched enough telly in my life. I haven't watched Breaking Bad, though. I'm quite proud of that. I don't know if you've managed to avoid that.
No, I've avoided that too, yeah.
Yeah. I think I'm just going to stubbornly never watch it just to annoy people that say, you haven't seen Breaking Bad. I'm sure it's really great, but
what tends to happen is that Robert will say, oh, haven't you seen this? And he's got this box set. And it's easier sometimes to watch things as a box set because you want to roll from one to the other.
Yeah.
So you end up with having a fest.
Yeah, no, at uni I got into 24 a little bit. That was one of the original.
Oh, yeah, he's got that in a big box set.
It's kind of the original hit US drama that people got addicted to, and then Lost came along, didn't it? Which I avoided that, thankfully.
All right.
And now it's Breaking Bad and House of Cards and...
Yeah.
I don't know, there's all sorts, aren't there?
Yeah.
I think someone's worked out that you could, if you watched all these hit US dramas, box sets back to back, you could, you know... It would take you years and years and years.
Take you a lifetime. 24/7, crazy.
But that links in with what a piece I found. It's a cool chap called Chase Reeves. One of the presenters on the Fizzle Show, which I think I've mentioned in the past.
Yep.
But he kind of uses his blog icedtothebrim.com to document his life, but also quite a lot of his kind of parenting. Not struggles isn't the right word, but he puts a lot of his parents' stuff online.
Yeah.
And he has got a dad blog as well, which I forgot the name of, but I'll find the link to. But he put a blog piece up just last week, which is quite timely, I thought, which linked to a TED Talk by Jennifer Senior called A New Script for Parents. And a quick quote from that was related to the pressure of how to raise a happy child, happy in inverted commas. A child's happiness is a very unfair burden to place on a parent, and happiness is an even more unfair burden to place on a kid.
Yeah.
And that got me thinking about how much time we focus on just trying to keep the child happy, like plunk them in front of the telly,
yep,
versus how long we should spend on teaching them how to create happiness themselves by being creative, you know?
Yeah, and that's a really important thing, isn't it? I mean, we talk about the idea of happiness, and certainly with the whole living the present work that we do, we're into people fulfilling themselves, and that leads to happiness, sure.
Yeah.
But one of the things that we were talking about earlier on, you were saying the thing about, is happiness overrated? You know, that is this drive to make the child happy a good one? And my take on that is that our role isn't to make children happy. Our role is to equip the child with problem-solving skills, so that whatever issues happen, as they say around here, shit happens, but whatever happens to you, if you've got the creative skills within you, then you can solve the problem.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have problems, you have challenges. It's that whole thing, isn't it? Yeah, and that's what leads to happiness. You can't buy happiness. You can't. Someone can't send you happiness in a jiffy bag. You know what I mean? It's something that you have to create. You've got to work the vineyards. You've got to grow the grapes to get the wine, kind of stuff. Yeah,
people think that you can buy happiness, and maybe that might be in the form of buying a one week holiday to somewhere hot and sunny, but yeah, that's not going to solve your problems, is it really? It's just going to maybe bury them for a week or...
Yeah, and the joke is always you can be more miserable in the sun and enjoy it kind of thing, can't you? It's like you can be sort of miserable with money, you know, be rich and happy, you know, rich and miserable, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that if we have the skills to solve whatever comes along, then we have the potential for happiness as like a foundation level,
mm-hmm.
you know. And like all things, you don't have to have all the skills. You need to know where to find the skills. Like, knowledge isn't what you know. Knowledge is knowing where you can find out what you need to know when you need to know it. That's the trick, isn't it?
Google,
yeah. Google is an amazing tool. Yeah, whoever Mr. Google is or was, you know, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
Or woman. That's very sexist, isn't it?
Well...
Mrs. Google.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, that's maybe a good place to start to summarise this week's episode in terms of...
I'm putting in some links here.
Yeah.
And one of them is to the kibbutz. When Israel was created after the Second World War, one of the things, the experiments, which is still undergoing, was the kibbutzim. And in the kibbutzim, you had communities of people living together where the children were effectively taken away from the parents, not in the sense of being isolated from the parents, but the children all lived together in like dormitory kind of commune states, and all of the parents looked after all of the children. And the idea was that you depersonalise that direct relationship between mother and child, and it was a collective all round.
Okay.
And depending, it's worth reading about, and I'll put a link up, but it's worth playing around with. And there's loads of research around the kibbutzim and the different effects that it's had on children. And some of the research says, no, it was a really good thing because these kids were highly socialised and...
Yeah.
And other research would say, no, they suffer from maternal deprivation, that uh-huh. kind of stuff. Yeah. So those kinds of things are really, really interesting. Yeah. The thing that I would like to kind of... as we're coming towards a close here, the bit that I would like to just, because I'm putting it up as something that everybody should have a read of. There's a guy called Khalil Gibran, who's a writer and a poet. And he wrote a book called The Prophet, which is amazing. And in The Prophet, he talks about different things. Like, he talks about the relationship between a woman and a man,
yep.
or between two people. Yeah. And one of the things that he says in it, and he has wonderful ways of expressing things, is how you shouldn't lean on each other. There shouldn't be that kind of pressure, that you should be independent people but working in harmony. And the way he describes it is that you should stand far enough apart to allow the winds of heaven to blow between you.
Ooh.
Which is like, you know, he has a good way of putting things.
Yeah, poetic.
But there's a bit on children. So he says here, Your children are not your children. They are the sons and daughters of life's longing for itself. They come through you, but they're not from you. And though they are with you, they do not belong to you.
Mm.
And I think that's a really, really powerful thing, because how many times, I could give you a million examples, when I was teaching guitar, the amount of times a child would turn up with a guitar who didn't want to learn guitar, who was bored by guitar, who really didn't want to know anything about it, then it was the parent that wanted to learn guitar. But they sent the child along. So in the end, I'd say to the parent, look, stop doing this to this child. If you want to learn guitar, get a bigger guitar and come along. You know, stop trying to live it through your child.
Yeah.
And the idea that we want to create a mini-me, you know, and maybe get a child to do all the things that I didn't do or couldn't do.
Yeah.
As opposed to working with that child. So the point of being a parent is to enable that child to fulfil their potential.
Yeah, I was chatting to someone about pushy parents. It's in the news a fair bit. Regularly-ish, the pushy parents on the side of the football pitches, you know,
Saturday mornings. Yeah.
They're getting more irate at the referee than the kids are.
Yeah.
And wanting to win more than the kids do in the whole...
Yeah.
There's a whole ethos within the Football Association now which is trying to redress the balance. Because in world football, England are way behind Germany, Spain, Brazil, obviously, all those guys. And a lot of its thinking is to do with how kids are brought up playing football.
Yeah,
and it's thought that in Britain and in England there's too much emphasis on trying to win and just hoof the ball up and score, whereas on the continent, in Germany and Spain, where they're the two kind of big powers in European football, it's more about all-on technique. It doesn't matter if you don't win the game when you're under 16, all that stuff, just focus on your technique, on your playing. And that links what we're
but is that about working together as a team?
Yeah,
so exactly. That's like the extended family, isn't it, working together.
Mm.
Yeah, as opposed to having an individual. I'm the star.
Yeah. So yeah. World Cup coming up soon.
Yeah.
England won't win.
It's nice positive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just watch Germany and Spain play because they're just... It's a joy. It's a joy to watch those teams.
I've never really been into football, but recently watching things, because lots of the guys in the family and our extended family are really into football, so yeah. You end up sat down at a screen watching Blues and Reds running around. And I'm quite astounded by some of the artistry of some of it. It's almost like choreographed dancing, and some of the movements and the way that the bodies move and the skills of the angles, the things are kicked at and all that kind of stuff. But very, very clever. I've been quite... impressed by the cleverness of these people.
Yeah. Oh, so, they are artists, some of those guys.
Yeah, amazing. Amazing.
Top of the game and all that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I love football. Yeah, but I don't want to turn into a pushy parent. I'm into my motor racing. So I'd quite like it if Will was a Formula One driver. But is that just so I could be that dad on the pit lane before the race, getting interviewed and all that stuff? And blimey, I don't know.
My father... who we've talked about before.
We've mentioned him.
He said to me once when I was... It was before I did my 11 plus. And he said to me, you have two choices. You can either be a doctor or a teacher. What do you want to do? That was it.
Yeah.
And what he was describing was his desire to have done one of those things that he didn't do.
Mm, okay.
Yeah? And that's important, isn't it? So if Will wants to be... a driver.
At the moment,
fabulous.
He's obsessed. He's always got my crash helmet out and gloves. I have to tell him a story about racing every night before he goes to bed.
Just a bit of indoctrination.
So he goes nuts. Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you need to learn hypnotherapy. You could get him on
there. Who knows? Well, but that's then I'm tempted to say, as long as he's happy, then I don't care what he does. That's kind of the standard answer, isn't it? But I don't want to just be happy for the sake of it. Happy, but. Mm. We've just discussed what happiness means a little bit. I
think that if you focus around the idea of developing the skills to solve problems, you will always find happiness because you can solve the things that stop you being happy. Yeah, if you go for happy as in something that is going to be given to you, or it's going to be given to you through money or stuff or that kind of stuff, then you've had it.
You're done for.
Yeah. Yeah. So the best thing we can do for our kids is teach them to be creative individuals. Yeah.
That's a good way to sum it up. Cool.
Yeah.
You've done your resource of the week, haven't you, I think?
Yeah, yeah, the Carlisle Gil Brand book, and the link's up, but really worth a read. Love it. I've had it for years, that book.
Mm.
And I've had lots of different.
Actually. I've got some Amazon vouchers, so I will. I might grab myself a copy of that. Yeah. Mine, which I'm just about to start rereading, is Pregnancy for Men by a chap called Mark Woods, and it guides you through the 9 months of pregnancy from the male perspective. Which I read it when Will was on, you know, on the go or being created, and I need to get through it again. But it's a good light-hearted kind of read, but some really interesting stuff in there too.
Yeah. And other resources to put up here. One is Families Need Fathers, which is something which is very much in the news, coming and going.
Yeah.
But that idea about what role does a father play in a family once it has broken up, which I've counteracted here but with a Facebook page, which is quite interesting, called Families Need Mothers. Which is good.
Is there a Families Need Both?
Well, there should be. Maybe we should do that one.
Yeah.
And the other one that I've put up as a link here, which is advice about stepfamilies and all the dilemmas and the problems that stepfamilies bring.
Okay.
And the pressure that has on couples that are trying to put it together.
Lots of advice out there, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Cool. We'll put those links up in the show notes, which you will find at our website, livingthepresent.co.uk. Next week, we're going to talk about willpower. Where's the willpower?
Is that just like William? Willpower.
Yeah, willpower. That could have been his middle name.
Yeah,
how to stay motivated. So
yeah.
I'm sure we'll have some interesting things to say there. So stay tuned for that next week. In the meantime, yeah, visit the website for all the show notes and links to the things we just discussed. You can also find lots of cool freebies and not freebies. There's books and resources that you've written, Sean. They're out there for a small fee.
Yeah. Yeah,
if you so wish to look at them.
And I'm halfway through the second edition of the Live in the Present book.
Oh, yeah, you've been making a few tweaks here and there.
Yeah, good, yeah.
Cool, yeah, that'll be out.
Interesting somewhere. To reread, actually, when it's a good book.
I need to have a look at it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, you can find that online too. In the meantime, find us on Twitter and Facebook. If you could leave us a review on iTunes, we would be much obliged, and we'll read your review out the following week as well, assuming it's a good one. Even if it's a bad one, we will.
Yeah.
Because we're all learning and growing. And that's about it, Sean. Have a good week.
And you.
And everyone out there. Take care.
See you now. Bye.
See ya.